We're going to do the induction into the Hall of Fame now. I don't take it down much. Time erases just about everyone from the marketplace of the culture. Even big Hollywood stars from the past, like say Tyrone Power or Gene Arthur, are probably unrecognizable names to most young people today. They were practically unrecognizable names to me when I was a child. In fact, back then, silent stars like Wallace Beery or Marie Dressler were people I had never heard of, despite the fact they were once world famous. So it's no surprise that in the little world of Canadian cartooning, time erases the names of important artists like Jimmy Freeze, or George Fair, or Jane Simpkins. But that doesn't erase what they left behind. Even if the big world of the marketplace has moved on to other things, their work still exists, and we can look back at it, admire it, learn from it, and try to understand it. That is the purpose of this Hall of Fame, to remind us that everything of value isn't confined to the moment that we currently occupy, to allow us to peer back and honor the memory of those who helped build the Canadian cartooning art form. Tonight we honor Mr. James Simpkins, born in 1910 and died in 2004. I've been waiting a long time for this particular Giants of the North induction. I've wanted him in the Hall of Fame since we began it 11 years ago. The only thing that has delayed his entry has been our desire to honor living cartoonists first. James Simpkins has always been a personal favorite of mine. When he died in 2004, the National Post asked me to write an obituary for him. What follows is a slightly altered form of an obituary. I think it's safe to say that Jasper the Bear was Canada's most recognizable cartoon character of the 20th century. Just how well known he is today is debatable. Certainly, if you are over 50 or live near Jasper Park, you will instantly know his face. However, I suspect he's fading away from younger generations. That's a shame, really. He was a character with a lot of quiet charm about him, much like his creator, James Simpkins. Simpkins was part of a small group of cartoonists, mostly starting out in the 1950s, who helped define the young pop culture of Canada. Peter Wally, Doug Wright, Len Norris, Walter Ball, Jimmy Freeze. These names are fading away as their work grows dusty on the shelves of neglected secondhand humor sections. This shows you that this was written a few years ago. There are no secondhand humor sections. Canada's homegrown media was small in those days, and our pop culture was still fresh and relatively undefined. Looking back, you can see that those involved made a concerted effort to create a Canadian pop culture that was separate and identifiable from that of Mother Britain or from the American neighbors to the south. The cliché images of Canada that we all roll our eyes at today were just then taking concrete shape during the decades of the 30s and the 60s. It was in his generation that all those Mounties and Beavers and Lumberjacks and gap-toothed hockey players were being converted from folksy images into fully streamlined archetypes by the use of the modern gag cartoon. Jasper himself was a part of this phenomenon, created to be a Canadian image, but with a modern sensibility, meant to avoid the saccharine sweetness of previous kitty-friendly animal characters. Jasper was cheeky, self-possessed, and he was something of an absurd con man as well. He first appeared in the pages of Maclean's magazines on November 15th, 1948, and ran weekly for more than 30 years. In short order, he became a familiar face on the Canadian landscape, and was popular enough to generate warehouses full of merchandising. Cups, figures, inflatables, coloring books, dolls, pins, banks, you name it. You can still purchase a Zippo lighter with his image on it today. There were also several popular book collections of his cartoons, and a newspaper comic strip that ran for a few years in the 1960s. People forget just how popular gag cartoons were back before the 1970s. We only see them in the New Yorker today, but back then every magazine had them, and there were thousands of magazines across North America. Simpkins was a freelance gag cartoonist, and that meant he worked wherever there was work. And in those days, before Federal Express, fax machines, scanners, or email, this meant he was mostly tied to the Canadian print media, mostly Toronto. His cartoons appeared in The Plains, Weekend, The Standard, Family Herald, The Montrealer, just about any old Canadian magazine you can dig up. He was obviously prolific, having produced a large body of cartoon work. It was undoubtedly hard work, too. You tried to make up for 30 years of gags about a bear. Canada was a pretty small market back then, and he must have pushed himself hard to make a good living for his family of five children. But looking at the drawings themselves, he obviously took real pleasure in the work. The cartoons are always wonderfully rendered, well-designed, full of life, and clearly show the sign of a hand that enjoyed drawing them. The gag cartoon was a strange, subtle little form, difficult to master. It's not as easy as it looks. Everything depended on a single drawing and a single line of text. A small frozen incident, sketched out, at which the viewer gazed, often perplexed, for just a second. Then the eyes dart down, they take in that explaining line of dialogue, and all is clear. All this in hope of conjuring a tiny little humorous spark in the mind that will be gently forgotten moments later. The whole production dare not feel labored. The drawing had to be breezy and pleasant to look at, the humor quick, matter of fact, off the cuff. If it smacked of effort or made you think about it too much, it failed. And you had to produce hundreds of these little visual puzzles a year and make a living, all just for the reader's momentary diversion. Like I said, hard work. I first came across Simpkins cartoons as a child in the pages of Canadian Boy magazine, the house organ of the Boy Scouts of Canada. He drew a cute little beaver cartoon in there titled Chopper that was a real favorite of mine. I copied those drawings of his over and over again, and that was a big part of my early education as a cartoonist. I spent many years tracking down those old magazines so I could once again study those cartoons. They are extremely sweet cartoons. They're part of a different era than the one we live in now. I only met Simpkins a couple of times. The last being when writer Brad McKay and I went out to visit him at his retirement home in Dundas, Ontario. We were doing some research for a possible book on Canadian cartoons in the past, and we wanted to ask him a few questions. As soon as we arrived, it was apparent we were in the right place. The elevator and the entire floor were papered with Xeroxes of his cartoons. What I didn't know then is that he was photocopying his old cartoons, carefully coloring them, and posting them up around the building. Upon entering his room, we immediately saw that it was similarly wallpapered with cartoons and photos. The souvenirs of the careers of cartoons were everywhere. A large photo of Pierre Trudeau hugging an oversized Jasper dominated the room. In the corner was a drawing table that was clearly still being used, probably to cover those photocopies. For a man in his 90s, he was in wonderful shape. Trim, well-dressed, obviously still very able. After some brief preliminaries, I launched into my questions. It didn't take long for me to realize that his memory was not up to the task. After a few more attempts to pry out some answers, I put my 87 type questions aside and decided to simply enjoy the opportunity to sit and talk with him. He was exceptionally charming that day. He never once stopped smiling, except perhaps when his memory failed him. I asked him when he retired, and like a true freelancer, he answered, "Oh, I haven't retired. I'm still shopping a few things around." Just before we left, he reached up and pulled down an object from a high shelf. "Look what I found for my grandchild," he said. It was a large golden plastic crown, and after holding it out for us to admire, he gently placed it on his own head. With a broad grin on his face, he flipped a switch on the side of the crown, and unexpectedly, tinny electronic music began to play. This is how I will always remember James. As we walked up to the car afterwards, I thought about the paths in life and how they take you to strange places. I thought of myself as a child, copying out those chopper cartoons at the kitchen table, and how they had led me to the door of this old man. He had no idea, I'm sure, that when he drew those ephemeral drawings back in the early 60s, more than 30 years later, someone would still be thinking about them. And I'm still thinking about them today, 10 years after I wrote that obituary. In fact, a few years ago, when I wrote my imaginary comics history, The Great Northern Brotherhood of Canadian Cartoonists, I couldn't resist casting Simpkins as the long-standing president of the made-up club. I didn't draw him in the book, but I should have, and I should have drawn him with a crown on. Instead, today I have the pleasure of inducting his memory into the Giants of the North Cartooning Hall of Fame. And I'd like to welcome his grandson, Kevin Boyle, to accept the medal for him.